Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after marathon negotiations on Capitol Hill, House Republicans have been able to secure enough support to pass their blueprint, advancing the Trump agenda and cutting $1.5 trillion in federal spending. But the devil's in the details. Representative Bob Latta shares his thoughts. Also this morning, is it really necessary in this day and age to use animals in testing the health and nutritional claims of the food we eat? Did you even realize that's still being done? And we have another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, April 11th, 2025. Palm Sunday is this weekend. Easter is next weekend. And the price of eggs is now at a record high. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released new data yesterday showing the average price of a dozen eggs is now at $6.23. Never been higher. It is an all-time high ahead of Easter. $6.23 a dozen. Economists warn that the price could go even higher in the coming days. So, just get your eggs now. They'll still be good. If you get them this weekend, they'll still be good by Easter, right? Anyway, it is no wonder that 3/4 of Americans in a new survey, even 30% of those who make over $100,000 a year say they are financially stressed these days. Gee, I wonder why. So anyway, get those eggs ahead of Easter. The Oscars making headlines. This was kind of interesting. I saw this on the Entertainment Wire this morning. In case you haven't heard this, the Oscars begin presenting an award for movie stunts. This is something that they have never done before. They have a stunt category. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences will give out the first award for achievement in stunt design at the 100th Academy Awards, honoring films released in 2027. So it's coming. Achievement in stunt design. The push for an award for stunts, reportedly led by director David Leitch, who was at the helm for last year's action comedy, The Fall Guy, which, of course, the plot was about a stuntman embroiled in a criminal conspiracy. The last time the Academy added a new category was 2024, when it established the Achievement in Casting Award, which is given out or will be given out for the first time at next year's Oscars. So that's kind of cool, and I think it's probably long overdue that the stuntmen in movies get their own award. I mean, you know, they're risking their lives to create those jaw-dropping scenes that we love at the box office. The least we could do is give them an award for that, you know? It's the least that we could do, I would think. So every day, we have to have a doom and gloom story, right? Something that we're fearful of, worried about, concerned over. We're all gonna die story. And here is today's doom and gloom item. Are you ready? There are over 1 billion pet dogs on the planet, but these adorable pups could be having a significant negative impact on the environment. Yes, research. I know, dogs. Who doesn't love dogs? Well, apparently the researchers at Curtin University in Perth, Australia, have found that man's best friend is not necessarily wildlife's best friend. They say the dogs could be disrupting wildlife and disturbing their natural habits and affecting, they're making other wildlife behave differently, and this has a negative impact on the environment. Birds, for example, tend to leave their nests when a dog walks by. Other animals will avoid areas that carry a dog scent entirely. Also, chemicals in flea medications can wash into waterways, which causes environmental issues with the runoff. The environmental impact of dogs in the home is far greater, more insidious, and more concerning than is generally recognized, according to researchers Bill Bateman and Lauren Gilson. So that's what that's our doom and gloom zone. We're all going to die because of our pet dogs, apparently. So we're all worried about this. I make sure that you have something to worry about today, because no day is complete without a doom and gloom story. So there you go. This is kind of cool. The U.S. military has its first ever Frankenjet. And it's officially ready to join the U.S. Air Force. It was constructed at Hill Air Force Base in Utah, made out of parts from two wrecked F-35s. In a news release, officials say the Frankenjet, this amalgamation of the parts, was rebuilt from two wrecked fighter jets, is now fully operational. And late last month, it was flown back to Hill Air Force Base and assigned to the 338th Fighter Wing. So it's been inspected, it is fully certified, and it is now part of the fleet, the 338th Fighter Wing, the Frankenjet. Hey, I tell you what, times are tough. Money is tight everywhere, and so you can't afford to just throw away an F-35 just because it's been wrecked. You have enough of them, you piece those. You know that times are tough when the military actually has to scrounge for spare parts and create a Frankenjet. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Speaking of airplanes, this is a civilian airplane story. Have you ever noticed, if you've ever taken a flight, I have never really thought about this, but now that I think about it, it's true. Have you ever noticed that the pilot of your commercial flight is always clean shaven? They never have beards. Do you ever wonder why that is? Well, apparently, it's because it is forbidden by most airlines. American, Delta, United, Southwest, JetBlue, Spirit all require their pilots to be clean shaven. And why is that, you might ask? Because past research has shown that facial hair could interrupt the flow of oxygen in those masks that they have to wear in case of emergency. That's the idea. If the cabin ever got depressurized, you had to put on your oxygen masks. And by the way, the pilots wear different oxygen masks than what the passengers have, which makes sense. Because they're pilots, they got to fly the plane. But anyway, the idea was, and research, past research backed this up, that the beard could interrupt the flow of oxygen, and that could be a problem for a pilot. However, there is more recent research out conducted by Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, which is the best known, most famous, most well-respected aeronautic university in the world, Embry-Riddle. They have recently released research which has found that there is no difference in oxygen saturation levels in the event that pilots need to put on their masks. Using a current on-demand airline oxygen mask, they say, oxygen saturation levels were never compromised by any of the beard conditions tested. They asked 24 volunteers to conduct a test in a hypoxia chamber. And airline pilots with beards of any length would not be impaired by hypoxia, which is the lack of oxygen, while dealing with an in-flight emergency. So whether the airlines will change their policy or not remains to be seen. But if you have ever noticed that your pilot is clean shaven, again, I've flown many times and I've never even noticed that. But now knowing it, I'm thinking, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a pilot with facial hair because it's been prohibited and that's why. But apparently it was just a myth. So maybe we'll see bearded pilots in the future. It's kind of interesting there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly cloudy today with a high in the upper 40s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the middle 30s. This is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and there are 81 pinwheels displayed on the fence outside the Hancock County Courthouse. Each pinwheel representing a child adjudicated as abused, neglected, or dependent in our community last year. Randall Galbraith, director of Hancock County Job and Family Services, says child abuse is everyone's problem and everyone's responsibility to help out and alleviate.
I want them to understand that that Hancock County is not immune to the problem of child abuse and that it's everyone's problem, everyone's responsibility to help out.
The pinwheels will remain on display through April, which is observed as National Child Abuse Prevention Month. See some pictures in this story on our website. Citing national security concerns, Ohio is poised to join a growing number of states legislating foreign land ownership to restrict property purchases by companies and individuals that are on the adversary list.
Those include China, Russia, and many more. The Columbus Dispatch reports that this legislation is being considered to protect military bases and critical infrastructure from security threats. A Russian cyber attack, which caused a small Texas town's water system to overflow last year, is being used as an example of potential threats. Legislators say national security is more important than economic development.
ONN's Jay Plyburn reporting. The state of Ohio says it's seen positive results from stronger distracted driving laws that were passed in 2023. Since the law took effect, the Highway Patrol says crashes are down 8%, injuries down 3%, and traffic fatalities down 4%. Get more in the story on our website. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library says 50 youth in the county submitted designs for the Youth Library Card Design Contest. And after the entries were narrowed down to three finalists, the community voted and chose Gabriella Berger's design. You can see Gabriella's design, which will be on the new Youth Library Cards, in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, after a marathon negotiating session on Capitol Hill, House Republicans yesterday were able to secure enough support to pass their blueprint advancing the Trump agenda and purportedly cutting $1.5 trillion in federal spending. But the devil is in the details here, and Representative Bob Latta is with us this morning. Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks very much, Chris.
So before we talk about this budget blueprint, I do want to ask you about the big story of the past week, and that has been President Trump's on-again, off-again reciprocal tariff plans. What are your thoughts on the way this has been rolled out? Is this the best way of securing more favorable trade deals from our partners?
Well, tariffs are out there for a reason. You want to make sure that the people that you're trading with, that they're treating you fairly. You know, the president has always said that he does not think that the United States is getting a fair deal across the world. Mm-hmm. And so he truly believes this is the way to go. Well, you know, I believe that you got to look at each one individually.
Yeah.
You know, so for instance, when you think about, you know, how big we are in auto industry in northern Ohio, southern Michigan, and then, of course, with Ontario, you know, the bridge is only about 80 miles from Bowling Green to go into Ontario. That an average car part goes across the bridge 13 times before it gets assembled onto a vehicle. And so the other issue is with oil, because you know, people say, well, we hear that the United States, you know, which we can outproduce Saudi Arabia or Russia in oil production on any given day. But there's one little snag that years ago, when we were told we had no oil, that all of our refineries are set up, especially in northern Ohio, for heavy crude, not light crude. and it costs about $1 billion to switch those over per plant. And then plus you have to have the pipeline to get the oil there.
Right.
So our oil right now is coming from Canada, which is a heavy crude because that's what our refineries have. So, and the president then backed off on those tariffs.
Yeah.
Because it would just hit us really hard. So just back to your point, I think you need to look at each one individually. And so I think now that there's a 90-day pause, with all the countries that have contacted the president saying they want to get something negotiated.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully during this 90 days, we can get this get done. And, things get back, where people saw it beforehand.
But the tariffs against China were not paused. And certainly one could argue that is the area of most concern. But doesn't China hold an ace in the hole, given the fact that they hold so much U.S. debt?
Well, you're right when it comes to this, and why when we get to talk about the budget reconciliation, we owe foreign creditors over $8.5 trillion. China is our second largest creditor. At one time, they held over $1 trillion of U.S. Treasury. They don't have as much today. But one of the things they've got to think about is that if we can't pay them back, they're not going to get their $1 trillion back.
So, right.
On China, one of the things that, COVID really pointed out that our supply chain was terrible. We have way too much reliance on communist China. We've got to start pulling back to a lot more friendly countries of the United States to make and produce. China produces, processes about 85% of the world's rare earth minerals.
Right.
We need to be doing it here.
Mm-hmm.
We got to take care of ourselves because when you really look at, especially with TikTok and everything else that was going on, China is considered an adversary. They are not considered a friendly nation.
Right.
And so every dollar we send them could be used against us at a later date.
As you accurately point out, that kind of leads to this budget blueprint that was finally passed in the House yesterday, which will address some of that spending, or purports to address some of that spending. But on paper, it only requires $4 billion in cuts. And the Speaker, along with Republicans in the Senate, have said that they want to see something along the lines of $1.5 trillion in spending cuts or more, but it only requires $4 billion, and it also, critics say, uses some accounting tricks to make deficit reduction look more substantial than it is. What are your thoughts on this? I know you voted for this blueprint plan. What does it truly do, and what needs to be improved here?
Well, first, under budget reconciliation, this is something that you only get to do when you have the House, the Senate, and the presidency all under one party, because you only have to have 51 votes to move something out of the Senate instead of the 60. So that's really important to get this done. We've talked over and over about how bad things are. This year alone, we're going to pay $1 trillion to just pay interest on the national debt.
Mm-hmm.
And in the not too distant future, the Ways and Means Committee is saying that interest payment will be the number, it'll pass Social Security. So, right now it's going to be Social Security, interest payment, national defense, and then Medicare. But what happens to the day when all we're going to be doing is paying interest on the debt? You won't have any money to do anything else. So this is what we're staring us right in the face. So what happens is you have to have each house passes a what we call our so you know our show we want is a our bottom number is $5 trillion to cut over 10 years and up to $2 trillion. And again, because of the Senate, with their arcane rules over there, they also have their parliamentarian, who is a non-elected official, which they allow to do this, is like the umpire. And so they came up with this low number, partly to get past their parliamentarian. And so what happens really is we're going to be, you know, our bottom number is going to be somewhere between 1.5 trillion to 2 trillion. And
you,
it's important that we, I'm sorry, if I just real quick,
sure.
if we don't get the higher number, then what has been agreed on in the House, so things don't explode out of control, we have to take that out of the tax side. And again, if we don't get this passed, the American people are going to see a $4.5 trillion tax increase mm-hmm. at the end of this year, because all the 2017 taxes, the deductions that we are, decreases that we did in the, it will expire, and it's going to just slam home. And so that's why we want to get to that $2 trillion mark.
But can you get to $1.5 or even $2 trillion without touching some of those entitlements like Social Security, like military mm-hmm. spending and Medicare? As you mentioned, those are the top budget line items outside of servicing the debt. A lot of people say it's not going to be possible to cut that much if you don't cut those things.
Well, and that's a good question, because under the Budget Reconciliation Act of 1974, and again, this is what's being put out by the Democrats and the left, saying that we're going to cut Social Security and you're going to cut Medicare. And the law says you can't. So that's totally off the table. That's not even on the table. Nobody's even talking about it, because you can't talk about it. So, in the House, all of our committees, serving on the Energy and Commerce Committee, we're tasked with finding $880 billion in either cuts or ways we can increase spending or get some money in there. And one of the ways is, you know, I was the chairman of the Communications and Technology Subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
We have not had a spectrum auction sale, and that's where our broadband comes from, the Wi-Fi out there, for 2 years because of the Democrat holding it up in the Senate. And so the Congressional Budget Office recently scored it, saying, well, we think you can get in an auction sale $74 billion at the high, maybe $65 billion at the low. I think it's going to be double that. So let's just say, so we could come up with $125 billion just selling off spectrum. So that reduces, you know, so that's, you know, so everybody's out there looking for things. And then, you know, we're looking at, what we can look on the energy side, this idea of, you know, these $75 for EV, you get rid of that, that's going to save a lot of money into the future, because if you take the requirement off, which was put on by the Biden administration and the Democrats, saying that we're all going to have to be driving an electric vehicle, mm-hmm. well, that's not going to happen. And so we get rid of that requirement. So, we're, you know, there's a lot of different ways, but everybody's tasked with finding something. Even on the defense side, over 10 years, they're tasked with a much smaller number to find what else that they can reduce if there's, you know, areas out there. And so it's like anything. If you can't find something to cut in a federal budget in the trillions of dollars every year, there's something wrong.
Again, we'll have to leave it there for now. Representative Bob Latta with us this morning. As you mentioned, that blueprint resolution passed yesterday in the House. Now attention turns to the Senate. And then, of course, the legislation itself will have to be written. So we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, as the process plays itself out. Congressman, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Well, you know, in recent years, pressure from animal rights organizations such as PETA have led to many companies moving away from animal testing and experimentation in a broad range of product categories. The latest effort now from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is to apply the same pressure to end animal testing in the food and beverage business. Joining us this morning is Dr. Frances Chang. She is a chief scientist of International Laboratory Methods for PETA. Dr. Chang, what is PETA's Eat Without Experiments initiative, and why is it needed? Kind of lay this out for us.
Yeah, PETA has this new initiative called Eat Without Experiments. It's a global initiative to eliminate animal experiments from the food and beverage industry. many people don't know that food companies, they experiment on animals, they kill them for profit. For foods that we eat every day, for example, right now we have a campaign on the Oreo maker. The company name is Mondelez International. They have paid experimenters to force feed candies, chips, and crackers with or without food fiber, and they kill them just so that they can attempt to make some bogus claim that they somehow made their junk food product healthier with these fibers and trick people into buying more.
That actually speaks to what I wanted to ask next, and that is what kinds of experiments are we talking about when it comes to food and beverage testing?
Yeah, so these testing are generally made to create health benefit claims, marketing claims, to dupe consumers into buying these products. So animals are intentionally and artificially made sick to begin with, and so that the food companies can test the product and artificially cure the illness. And at the end of these experiments, the animals are typically killed, sometimes in violent ways. And at the end, they're dissected and thrown into garbage bag and thrown out.
And so, just to be clear, you're saying that many of these experiments are done for marketing purposes, more than for safety purposes, because some testing is required by law, is it not? I mean, you have to make sure that the foods that we consume are in fact safe.
These are food products that are already on the shelf. They're already determined that people are eating them every day. There's no safety issues. Now, you're talking about regulations. In the U.S., there's no regulations that would require animal experiments for food. For food safety regulations, it doesn't require animal experiments because there are already tons of animal-free test methods, in vitro methods, computer modeling methods that are internationally recognized and regulatory agencies approved that can be used to assess the safety of food. For health claim regulations, health claim being the most common way that these experiments are done for, in the U.S., Canada, and the European Union, they don't require animal experiments. They require human testing instead. And in the regulations, they explain that because human testing is the gold standard for food testing, and animals, they have different physiology, and therefore animal experiments cannot be used to provide scientific information that can be applicable to humans. In other parts of the world, there are regulations for food that would trigger animal experiments. In those situations, our focus has been on changing the regulations themselves. So PETA has an international team of scientists and lawyers, and we regularly meet with regulators and help these agencies update their regulations. For example, in Taiwan, we have convinced the Taiwan FDA to remove the animal experiments recommendation from six of its health claim regulations already, and there are eight more in the works. In this situation, food companies, they can come to PETA for help also. We provide consulting services come up with a proposal to convince these regulatory agencies to accept animal-free test methods.
And
they can still participate in the program. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask and have you expand on this, the type of of ethical research that these food and beverage companies could pursue instead of animal testing. You mentioned in some cases human trials, which are certainly done in the pharmaceutical industry, and computer models. How advanced is that? I mean, is that ready for prime time in the sense that it can take the place of actual testing on living beings?
Yeah, so for food safety, for example, the toxicity endpoints, these are assessed with the in vitro and the computer modeling methods. These methods are created based on human physiology, so they're more accurate. It's not just sufficient. They're more accurate than animal experiments. And again, these are regulatory agencies approved and internationally recognized. There's no question about that. It has been used for decades and decades to assess food safety. And for foods that don't have safety issues, foods that we eat every day, clinical studies have already been done on these foods. And in fact, most of the foods that we eat already have human data.
Yeah.
And in this situation, the animal experiment is completely unnecessary. Their background noise, they don't even contribute. They don't add anything new to the scientific knowledge that we have human data. And if we need more, we can find like consenting human volunteers to participate in these clinical studies, and it would be ethical too.
And ultimately, and just to interject this again, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking if consumer computer modeling is effective, is just as accurate as effective, wouldn't that also be more cost effective at the end of the day? Maybe not up front, but ultimately.
Exactly.
But ultimately,
yeah, exactly. But they companies, they choose animal testing over clinical studies because animal testing is cheaper than clinical studies.
Yeah.
But like, they're not doing this for the law. You know, they're just trying to create some like marketing claims. And, you know, new studies have shown that like, eating ABC can cure XYZ. So in those, with that in mind, that all they have to do is just to publish a study, and it doesn't have to be human studies, and doesn't have to be ethical. It doesn't have to apply to humans. It just has to be a study.
Mm.
And then they take advantage of the fact that people don't read the details. They don't see that these are animal experiments. Sometimes the news articles don't even mention that these are animal experiments.
Yeah.
And you have to go into the journal articles to actually see the conflict of interest. Oh, these are funded by companies that made this product.
Yeah. Again, Dr. Francis Cheng is a chief scientist of International Laboratory Methods for PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, their Eat Without Experiments initiative that they are launching. Where do folks learn more about it real quickly?
PETA.org/EWE. So it's PETA.org/EWE.
Dr. Cheng, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
As if dealing with all of the flooding along the Ohio River wasn't enough, you know, all of the rain that they got last week, especially in southern Ohio, we did not get the worst of it, but central southern Ohio, they got hammered. They got drenched. The Ohio River was out of its banks, and in Cincinnati, along the river and in northern Kentucky, they had a real mess. This past weekend, finally, the floodwaters are receding. But as if dealing with all of that wasn't enough, no sooner has the water receded, but authorities in Hamilton County, which is Cincinnati, had to deal with a gooey mess on the highway. A semi hauling 40,000 pounds of cheese overturned late last night on I-75. 40,000 pounds of cheese on the highway, I-75. Fortunately, no one was hurt. This was apparently late last night, and things are back to normal. But can you imagine? I think everything will be fine for the morning commute. because can you imagine trying to explain to your boss? I swear. I'm late because there were 40,000 pounds of cheese on the highway. Yeah. My goodness. Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. Elsewhere, the odd and unusual side of it. Speaking of highway and car-related, transportation-related stories, police in Mays, Kansas, got reports of an individual who was weaving in and out of traffic and appeared to be too young to drive. They responded and cops intercepted the boy in the parking lot of the Prey Woodman Elementary School. Turns out it was a 9-year-old driving a white Chevy after he missed the school bus. Police say the boy was worried about missing some important state tests and felt he had no other option after he missed the school bus to take mom and dad's car and drive it to school. Now, why mom and dad couldn't drive him to school, I have no idea. But Police Sergeant Braden Blackburn did admit that the boy parked in the parking lot better than most adults do. He's got the parking thing down. Wasn't the greatest driver, but at least he he parked the car fine. No citations were issued, and it will be up to the parents to dole out the appropriate punishment. But 9-year-old in Kansas driving himself. At least he was conscientious enough to realize he missed the bus, but there were some important an important test he had to be at a class for. He didn't want to miss school. So at least there is that. But still, not a good option. Let's see. Speaking of kids in the broken news, a 70-year-old woman from Lincoln County, Missouri, who has fostered over 200 children, has now been accused of trading a child for an exotic monkey. What? Wait, wait, what? The age of the child is unclear, but they believe she is a teenager under 17 years of age. Sheriff Rick Harrell said his office would not comment on the case, but it was confirmed that a handful of monkeys were found at the home of the suspect. It was described to me early on that the defendant became frustrated with this individual child and asked her friend in Texas if she would just take the kid. That's what the sheriff or the prosecutor said. Mike Wood, the prosecutor in the case, said, "We will have to further investigate whether that was actually a trade for the child or if it was something that does not rise to the level of any type of trafficking." But that's the story. She traded a kid for an exotic monkey. Wow. I would imagine that the authorities frown on that sort of thing. Yeah. Dateline Sweden, New York. I'm not sure where Sweden, New York is, but an interesting bank heist or attempted bank heist. We've seen enough movies to know that the getaway is maybe the most important part of the whole operation. Apparently, though, this robber did not get that memo. According to local news reports, the alleged thief's score of over $450,000 in cash from a local bank branch fell apart because his blue Honda Civic kept breaking down just minutes after the robbery took place. He had a getaway car. He just didn't stop to think that really what he needed was a reliable getaway car. Maybe he was stealing $450,000 because he knew he needed to get a new car. Maybe that was... The car kept breaking down just minutes after the robbery took place. The suspect's car troubles caused him to get out and start wiping down the vehicle and removing its license plates. He figured he was going to abandon the car, but he didn't want to leave the plates or his prints behind. So these antics, trying to remove the plates and wipe down the car, caught the attention of a witness who then called 911, and cops tracked the crook down alongside another car, as well as all of the cash. This was, according to investigator Sergeant David Bolton in a statement, or an understatement, this was a well-planned operation, except for the car. Oh, man. So, you know, it is the, it's always the simplest of things that do you in, you know? It's getting so, the reliability of cars today, you can't even rob a bank anymore. Man. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a group of college students in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, are being held hostage in their house. This is not a criminal case, though. They're being held hostage by a pair of overly protective, aggressive geese. They're being held hostage in their home by a pair of overly protective, aggressive geese. It seems that the geese have set up a nest outside the front door of the home. And since it is illegal to disturb a goose nest under Canada's Migratory Birds Convention Act, Joey Harris and her roommates' only course of action is to wait it out until nesting season is over. Them she's made a nest right at the front door. They can't disturb the nest. It's illegal to do so. And so they've been left with no choice. And they are being held hostage in their home. It is, in the meantime, they have come to find some humor in the situation, treating security footage of neighbors encountering the geese like it's a movie. In one scene, a friend of Ms. Harris came to visit with a box of Costco croissants when one of the geese attacked him. She said the croissants went flying and then the geese started eating them. What are they going to do? They can't leave the house until nesting season is over. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Professional business leaders coming together to help create lasting change.
I'm George McAfee, and I've lived in Findlay for over 35 years. I belong to Rotary because of its mission and its vision. Putting service above self and uniting local leaders to effect positive change are fundamental to my own core beliefs. This makes being a Rotarian so meaningful to me.
To become part of an organization that meets at the intersection of business and community stewardship, go to findlayrotary.org.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. And here is a survey that really speaks to the kind of lives that we live in the digital age. This is really talks about the kind of society, the world that we live in. This is a new survey of 2,000 adults conducted by Talker Research. The average American, what they find is that the average American begins to panic when their phone charge is at 38%. That's on average. That's when we start to panic about how much juice we have left in our phone. 38%. Now, that being said, 34% of Americans say they are fine with waiting until the 20% mark before looking for their charger, and an exceptionally casual 13% of us say that we don't worry about our phone's charge until it falls beneath 10%. When does that panic set in for you? 38% is the average. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, we talk about the people who don't worry about it until, you know, it's like 10% and about to die. The other end of the spectrum, 24% of Americans start to worry about their phone's battery life before it's even reached 50%. So it's more than half full. You're talking about a glass half full. This is a battery half full. And there are a fair number of people who still worry, even though they're not yet to 50%. Charging worry is stronger. Its charging anxiety is stronger among younger generations. Gen Z's threshold for battery pack panic starts building at just 44% of battery life remaining. Millennials at 43%. Gen Xers, though, won't start worrying about the charge until it drops to 38%. And boomers are the most relaxed generation when it comes to their phone battery, waiting until 34% on average to start looking for an outlet to charge their phone. But I'm thinking because baby boomers, you know, they know I can live without it. Doesn't matter so much if my phone dies, I can live without it. The younger generations, they can't. So it makes sense that they have a heightened level of anxiety for all of this. As is tradition, it is time once again for another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. And my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
All well rested and bright eyed and bushy tailed here this morning.
I needed it. It's been a rough week.
Well, we'll try it if others out there are saying, yeah, I hear you, sister. We'll try and make it a little bit easier here with a collection of really yummy recipes
yes.
This morning. And we're going to start with one. This is one that we had, last week.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I didn't do much cooking this week.
It was it's sweet and spicy honey pepper chicken with macaroni cheese.
Yes. So this is two boneless chicken breasts sliced up, salt and pepper to taste, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/2 cup of hot honey, 1/4 cup of soy sauce, 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 teaspoon of black pepper, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of onion powder. And then for the macaroni and cheese, 8 ounces of macaroni, 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of flour, 2 cups of milk, 2 cups of cheddar cheese shredded, 1 cup of mozzarella cheese shredded, and salt and pepper to taste.
By the way, so many people will not do homemade mac and cheese thinking that it's difficult to do or something. And, you know, the Kraft macaroni and cheese is really easy. But this is good.
Yeah.
This is really good, and it's not complicated.
No, it's not. So cut up and then season your chicken breasts with your salt and pepper in a skillet. Heat olive oil over medium heat. Cook your chicken until golden, about 6 to 7 minutes on each side. Remove and set that aside. In the same skillet, mix your hot honey, your soy sauce, your vinegar, your black pepper, your garlic powder, and your onion powder. Simmer until thickened, about 2 to 3 minutes. Return your chicken to the skillet and cook it with the sauce. Boil your macaroni until al dente. Drain and set aside. Melt butter in a pot. Stir in your flour. This is going to be making that roux. Then gradually whisk in your milk until smooth. Cook until thickened. Add your cheese. Mix until smooth. Season with your salt and pepper. Turn your heat down to a simmer. Add the cooked macaroni with the chicken. Mm-hmm. Plate that with. And then plate your macaroni and cheese and top it with your hot honey pepper chicken and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff.
It is. And, it's really good.
By the way, the hot honey doesn't add a whole lot of heat.
No,
there.
It doesn't.
There's a little bit of a kick.
There's but it's a little
not,
bit,
yeah.
but not.
I'm not typically a fan of spicy food, and I really like this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
To go along with that, as a side, this is a cheesy quick bread. And by the way, I will mention, we'll do this in honor of our daughter-in-law who has a birthday today.
Yes.
And she loves baking bread.
Yes,
that's
she
one
does.
Of, that's one of her thing. Things.
Yes, she loves
is,
doing bread.
Is doing
she
bread.
She makes very good bread. She's
very good bread.
Yeah, she's very, she is, she's got the sourdough down. See, I'm jealous of that because not one of the things I have had a desire to try, and she loves it, and she makes really good sourdough bread.
Happy birthday, Riley.
Happy birthday.
All right. So we have the cheesy quick bread.
Yes.
It ain't Riley's bread, but it's still pretty good.
Yes. So this is Kyra's bread. So this is 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of dried oregano, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 1 cup of shredded cheddar cheese, 1/2 cup of shredded mozzarella cheese, 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 1 1/4 cups of buttermilk, 1/4 cup of unsalted butter melted, and 2 large eggs. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees, grease the loaf pan, and set that aside. And then in a large mixing bowl, whisk together your flour, your baking powder, your baking soda, your salt, your garlic powder, your dried oregano, your dried thyme. And then add the shredded cheeses, both of them, the mozzarella and the cheddar and the Parmesan to the dry ingredients. Then stirring the distributed cheese evenly, add another mixing bowl. Add your buttermilk, your melted butter, your eggs until that's all well combined. Then pour the wet ingredients into the dry ingredients. Mix that until well combined. Be careful. Just combine it. If there's a few lumps, that's okay. Do not overmix this.
Don't overmix.
No.
Okay.
Nope. Pour your batter into your prepared loaf pan, spreading it out into an even layer. Bake in your preheated oven for 45 to 50 minutes or until a toothpick insert in the center of the loaf comes out clean. Remove your bread from the oven. Let it cool for about 10 minutes. I cool mine on a cooling rack.
Mm-hmm.
And then take it. Then once it's cooled, for that 10 minutes, then take it out of the pan, put it back on the cooling rack, and let it cool until it's completely cool, and then mm-hmm. slice and enjoy.
Okay. Simple as that, the yes. cheesy quick bread. And then quickly for dessert, we have yes. a recipe for cake mix toffee yeah. bars.
This is really easy, but really this would be a really good one for Easter.
Okay.
One box of yellow cake mix, a half a cup of butter melted, one large egg, one cup of toffee bites, one 14-ounce can of sweetened condensed milk, one cup of semi-sweet chocolate chips, and one teaspoon of vanilla extract. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees and grease a 9 by 13-inch baking dish in a large bowl. Mix the cake mix, melted butter, egg until dough forms. Press 2/3 of the dough evenly into the bottom of your prepared baking pan. Sprinkle the toffee bits evenly over the dough. And you're kind of doing layers here. Then in a small saucepan over low heat, stir together the sweetened condensed milk, the chocolate chips, and the vanilla extract until melted and smooth. Pour that mixture over the toffee bites. Crumble the remaining dough over the chocolate layer. Bake for 25 to 30 minutes or until the top is golden brown. Allow the bars to cool completely before slicing and enjoy.
Yeah, that does.
And this is another really one. Easy. Use your plastic knife to slice it.
Okay, as opposed to a metal
knife. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's sort of a brownie texture, so that's why I say use your plastic knife, because then it won't stick to your knife.
Gotcha. Okay. So a little tip, little hack yes. there. From Kyra's Kitchen, the recipes for the sweet and spicy honey pepper chicken with macaroni and cheese, the cheesy quick bread, and the cake mix toffee bars are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right?
Yep.
And go to at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook and find those there. We also have it linked up at goodmornings.net. Now, next week for yes. Easter,
yes.
the recipes are breakfast recipes.
Easter breakfast.
Which I thought that's kind of an interesting idea because, yeah. you know, we think Easter dinner and yeah. all that, but you probably have your Easter dinner recipes that you yeah. do. But an Easter breakfast or yeah. an Easter brunch?
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially if you go to an early church service or something like sure. that, and you would rather do a brunch after your church service.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you're going somewhere else for your family later.
Mm-hmm.
This is just something we'll look different forward to that. And easy.
So that is next week for the Easter holiday. And in the meantime, again, follow Kyra's Kitchen on Facebook for all of the recipes. And my wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, wearing blue and planting pinwheels are symbolic gestures recognizing Child Abuse Prevention Month, and that's all fine, but what will really make a lasting difference to address a serious problem? So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, gone out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.